to Envision This, connecting you to visionaries of a more resilient, equitable, and earth-friendly future. We have a great guest tonight, but before I introduce her, I want to let you know that Burl and I, your co-hosts, are going to be interviewed by Jessie Nichols George on her show, Code Connection, this Friday, September 4th at 7 p.m. We're going to be sharing insights from our book, Sophia's Web, A Passionate Call to Heal Our Wounded Nature. I haven't heard back from Jessie as to the exact connection, so if you would like to listen to the show, either Google Jessie Nichols George Code Connection or email us at mary@envisionthismedia.com. Thank you. Our guest tonight, Debbie Hilbisch, is with us to share her mission to inspire students to read, write, and create. She isn't a teacher. She is chairperson and secretary at SAVI, Student Author Visits Incorporated. SAVI is a free program providing elementary fourth grade classes and boys and girls clubs in selected areas. Larry, who is SAVI's founder and a writer and illustrator of children's books, through this program reads from his books, plays music for the children, answers their questions about writing and illustrating books, publishing them, and leaves them with a free SAVI pack, which consists of a copy of signed chapter book, he signs it as the author, a CD with 8 age-appropriate songs, and a button that says Bookworm Buddy button. So this is kind of exciting work. Debbie, how did you, as a post office employee, come to be so very interested in encouraging children's literacy?
Well, Mary, I have 2 grown children of my own, and I have grandchildren, so, of course, education has always sort of been in the forefront, what quality of education they're getting. But I probably wasn't real involved with it until I met Larry James, and he sort of opened my eyes to what is going on in the schools now. The lack of funding that is available, the pushing through of students that really are not equipped to move on to another grade, and getting involved with him in this organization has really inspired me to get more involved with children.
Why are you and he so passionate about literacy?
Well, in my opinion, we cannot move forward, any of us, without reading comprehension. It is just such a basic, fundamental need of our social country. A child is not going to progress if they don't understand the written word. There's not a job you can get, even filling out a job application. You just can't get a job if you don't understand what you're reading. To communicate at the very basic level, we just need that.
Before you hooked up with Student Author Visits Incorporated, you wrote a couple of poetry books. What would you like to share with us about the books you wrote?
Well, what I'd like to share is that poetry is a very hard sell. I'm finding it's sort of a dying art. It's a dying art, but what I did manage to get into after I wrote my books, I started a tour of doing book signings, and that opened up another field to me, which was young adults learning about poetry, and I was invited by several of the libraries throughout Arizona and New Mexico states to hold hour-long programs to sort of teach these young adults an appreciation for poetry. And there again, I guess that sort of opened the door of me getting in with the younger, the school-age children, and how eager they are and how excited they are to learn these things if we just can take the time or find the people that are willing to share the knowledge that they have. It was a totally enjoyable experience for me. And I tell you, those kids are all so talented. I have a book of poetry that I gathered from some of their writings, and it's just amazing the way their minds work once you help them open that door just a little bit.
That's wonderful. That's great. I did my graduate degree in English education, but really in reading. And one of the research projects that I did was teaching parents to read, parents who were illiterate, but who now had children and wanted to be able to read children's books with their children. And I found that working with them on, you know, reading a children's book with them, I was able to teach them to read at that basic level without insulting them, because they had a reason to be dealing with children's books. And we would do the same kind of thing you're doing with giving a book to the parents, you know, after we helped them to learn to read it, because they were going to be embarrassed not to be able to read with their kids.
I'm just
right. That is right, and that is one of the problems in our education in America today, is because they do push so many people through the school system so quickly, they feel inadequate, and it's really by no fault of their own, in my opinion. It's because we haven't had the resources or the time available to help them reach a goal in reading, even the basic reading, as you say, that makes them comfortable to move forward.
Mm-hmm. How does that relate to the No Child Left Behind Act? You know, I've got a hunch that there's something behind that that's driving some of this.
Actually, I have to admit, what I have read about the No Child Left Behind Act, I don't really understand. It's the basic concept was that every child would be educated to some level, that they would not be left behind, but we don't see that happening at all. And as a matter of fact, I have spoken with teachers in Colorado Springs, and I'm not going to name schools or teachers, but just last spring I had a very interesting conversation with a teacher that told me their school did not allow them to hold back a student because they could not read or understand the lessons because they have too many kids coming up behind. They just pushed them through. So the No Child Left Behind Act has a lot of loopholes. It needs a lot of work. They are revising that, I have heard, that they are revising it, but how it's going to all come out in the end, I'm not sure yet.
Debbie, how did you meet up with Larry James and decide that Savvy, his program, was a good way to fulfill your vision to get children excited about reading?
Well, I initially met Larry when I was doing author fair hosting at a small town in Arizona, Quartzsite, Arizona. He was there one season and set up a booth with his children's books and CDs, and we just got to talking and visiting. And then as the season ended, I just kept in touch with Larry and what he was doing with his activities of inspiring children to read in his own way. And through the years, as the years went by, Larry lost a lot of the funding he had through the school and just decided he was going to start this nonprofit organization to continue doing what he had been doing, but now in a nonprofit line rather than expecting a school to give him a little bit of money. And he mentioned this to me. He knew I had been following his work, and one thing just led to another, and here I am.
What would you like to share most with our listeners about Savvy and how it works and why it works?
Ooh, boy, that's opening up a lot. I think it works because it is something tangible that the children can see. They have an author, a real author in front of them that has written children's books. He's very good to explain how he got the storyline, what led him to writing. He's very good at engrossing the children. And so that is probably the basis of why it has proven so well received. Our problem right now, and I will just say this right up front, is funding. Funding is always an issue with us. And a lot of the schools we have not been able to visit, although we've gotten requests from many schools, we just do not have the funding available to provide the material to all of the schools that we hope to be able to reach someday.
I wonder if a school that was interested in having you but couldn't afford to do it out of their school budget, which I thoroughly understand, could set up some kind of campaign to get, like, parents or whatever to contribute to bring you in. And
yes, that would be a possibility, and we are constantly striving to find fundraisers. We are trying, as a matter of fact, our very first big fundraiser, we are trying to organize an EduFund Fair in the Phoenix area for next spring. And we're hoping that will bring in a lot of people and give us a lot of positive, good energy to help us spread the word that the funding is where we really need the help right now.
Mm-hmm.
We do also, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I certainly can empathize with that.
Yes, yes. Oh, absolutely, in your capacity you do. And we do have several donations. We do right now, if people can donate $10 to the cause, we would gladly send a free copy of either Fly Man and Miss Blondie Blue or the September Rose Searches for Hidden Gold, which are the two books that Larry uses right now. And both of those books I will like to put in also, September Rose Searches for Hidden Gold. Larry has written his books to go along with what children are learning in the fourth grade. And the book about September Rose is based in the Arizona area, so it talks about the superstitious mountains, it talks about the state birds, and various things that the children need to learn while they're in that grade. And also his book, Fly Man and Miss Blondie Blue, they're more associated with California and the Washington school curriculum and what they have for their children in that particular age group. So our books are also sort of specific to the areas that we go to. It's in line with what they're learning at the time.
Would his publishers be willing to, donate some copies or make them available to him a lot more cheaply so that when he gives kids the free Savvy Pack, including a book that he signed, it would be expensive for you?
Yes, actually, we are also working on that plug right now. And unfortunately, I will say, and I hate to say this because we just outsource in this country already ridiculously, but to date, we have gotten the best prices out of China. I hate to say it.
Mm-hmm.
But they are willing to give us the best deal for the most books. It's sad.
Interesting.
Yes.
Take down Toolbox for Education. location and Google it later, because he may have some ideas for you in terms of getting funding and getting those books out there.
I will, and I really appreciate that. And also, I would also like to talk a little bit about some of the things in our society that have prompted the need for us to be a little bit more aware of the education that our children need to get. That the literacy rate among fourth grade students in the U.S. is a sobering 66% below proficient. And that is on the 2013 National Assessment of Education Progress Test. 66%. Yes, 66% of them, they are not reading it right. That's it, at fourth grade level, which is a staggering amount.
No, 44.
I mean 44, I'm sorry. Yeah, I flunked that math.
yes, only 44% of fourth graders are actually reading at their grade level, what is expected of them from national assessment tests. And what's even more alarming than that is when you go to the areas that have low-income backgrounds, it jumps up to 80%. 80% of the children in low-income areas are not reading at grade level. And
so
that affects us.
We actually, as a culture, have a lot of work to do both in income parity so that you don't have the children that are left behind, but also working on getting the education really focused on the children and what they're ready to do rather than on curriculum.
Correct. Yes, that is it. That we really do need to focus on that. And again, and I think the problem lies, again, in the fact that it is the lower income, the minorities, the disabled children, they are the ones that are truly falling through the cracks. But we don't realize how later down the road, how significantly those dropouts are affecting our economy, because these people aren't prepared to work. They don't have the education to work. There's no jobs available, and it just perpetuates throughout their adult lives if it's not taken care of now.
We have a caller who wants to join the conversation. Caller from 928. I'm going to ask you to identify yourself, but first to turn off your radio because I think it's causing us some feedback.
Hello.
Caller from 928.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Debbie?
Yes, hello.
Hi, this is Sharon.
Hi, Sharon.
Oh, hi, Miss Sharon.
From
How
Lake
are
Havasu.
You?
Nice I just to speak you know,
Sharon.
I'm not as familiar with this program as I should be, but I just wanted to call in and talk about what a great organizer you are, and I know that this program is going to be successful because I've seen you in the past working with bringing literature out to many people, you know, what you did in Quartzsite. And it doesn't surprise me. Over the years, I've read your poetry, and it doesn't surprise me that your heart is so into this. And I think that bringing this to the youth is just, bringing the youth into the world of literature is just... it's just so you, and I'm so glad you're doing this, and I hope you're enjoying it as much as the children, I'm sure, are.
Oh, I am, and thank you, Sharon, so much. I really appreciate all that positive feedback. It'll ought to make me walk on air for another 3 years.
You should.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You should. I mean, what you're doing is you see it every day in the schools, and you see it statistics that they're giving out about what the children are doing, and we've got to get back to reading. And what you and Larry are doing is just I think that's what's going to happen, and I just want to wish you a lot of luck with it.
Thank you so much, Sharon, and thank you for your continued support. You're awesome.
You are too, dear. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I also have some other sort of sobering statistics. In 2012, I was in my car listening to an Arizona public radio broadcast, and they were speaking about the high percentage of children now being born with autism. The Center for Disease Control says that 1 in 68 children have some form of autism. And these children are also coming into our public schools. And they are the ones that need the extra work, and they are the ones that get the least amount of attention.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, you know, that ties us into so many problems in our culture, because we aren't all that child-oriented as we pretend to be. And certainly that's not where the bulk of our funding goes.
That's, I agree with you.
Kind of thing our taxes support very readily. And it's understandable that people don't want to pay more local taxes for the schools because they're already struggling financially. And we really have to find a way to reach out to children in small groups and almost one at a time.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. The taxing in our country, as you say, most people just don't have the money available. Even if they wanted to pay higher taxes for schooling, it's just not feasible at this time. And then we have the parents that are trying so hard to do homeschooling or trying alternate methods that are still paying taxes for school taxes. And it's just a per problem, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. It is one of the ways in which we really have to encourage visionaries who see a way to do it better in the future.
I agree. It would be so wonderful if we could all come together and instead of bashing what is, try to work out what is not. Try to improve on what we have with what we have available, whatever material it is, whatever volunteers, whatever we can do to get people out there. It's just, it's a national crisis, really.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, anyone who has some ideas on what communities can do or are doing or small groups within a community, please feel free to call in and join the conversation. The number is 646-652-2235. That's 646-652-2235.
How are children responding to the Savvy program?
Children love it. They absolutely love it when we come in. They're eager and excited. And I can remember when Larry first started doing this, he had a group of 70 children he was speaking to. And he said behind him he could hear a teacher and another person, a parent that had come, sort of chattering behind him and kind of giggling. And he thought, oh, my gosh, I've done something wrong or I've made a big mistake. And when the program was over, he approached them about it. And the teacher said to Larry, this is the quietest I have seen a group of 70 students sit and listen to a program in all the years I've been teaching. So the children are, they love the idea that, I think what they like most is the possibility that this is something that they could do. This is a viable opportunity for a career when they grow up.
Mm-hmm.
To get into some sort of writing or doing music, or it just expands their possible horizons a little.
Well, it also helps them to express themselves.
Correct. And another thing about writing, and that is a very good point, Burl. Thank you for bringing that up. I think a lot of times in this society that we have so structured anymore, children almost forget that they need to use their imagination. They need to be able to create for themselves. There's no wrong or right on how we do things a lot of times. It's just doing it your way, if it works for you.
So you give them flexibility to be creative?
Correct, yes. Flexibility to be creative and use their own imagination.
Please tell us about the free Savvy Pack and maybe a couple of stories about how children are responding to that.
Oh, yes. Well, the Savvy Pack, as you sort of mentioned earlier, Mary, every child, when Larry goes to a school, prior to the event, he gets a list of names of all of the children that will be participating in the performance. After the performance is over, Larry finds a little quiet corner, and he personally signs every book and addresses it to the children. If the parents would like to have a personal note to each child, Larry will do that also. And the book is the chapter book, whatever he has taken, like the September Rose. The Fly Man is actually Fly Man and Miss Blondie Blue. It's more of like a comic book for kids. And so, but they'll each get one of these. And then the button is just a little metal button they can put on their shirt or a knapsack, a backpack, whatever they may have, that just says that they like to read and that they're Savvy kids and that they've earned this buddy button.
Do you see young people wearing their buttons and pleased with them?
I have to be real honest with you and say that as a rule, I am not usually in the geographical area that the readings are going on. I'm stationed in New Mexico, which is where I do almost all of my work of trying to get the word out. And Larry is normally either in Washington, California, or Arizona. So even though we meet occasionally for the organization, I haven't actually got to set in on one of these readings yet or get to see the children with their little happy faces after they've gotten to sit in on one.
Well, there's a picture on the promotional for this show that shows their happy faces.
Yes, a reward for a job well done. They had a little, I was involved with that. That was in Quartzsite, Arizona. And after the program and school was out, we had a little get-together at the park and a good for you for getting involved and asking questions and being a part of the program. So I did get involved in one. I have to eat my words all the way back. We don't normally do that side of it. Usually once Larry leaves the school, the program is over. Quartzsite just happens to be a very, very small area, and it was something that we could do there. But we don't normally get the chance to interact with the children out of the school.
Okay. You gave us one example of a teacher really, really impressed with how quiet the kids were being and how responsive they were being. Do you have any other examples to share with us about either teacher or parent or community responsive?
I do have one that when we were first starting this program and getting it established, mostly it was in the larger schools in the Arizona, Maricopa County, so in Phoenix, Arizona. And there was a young child there that had a cousin that lived in Kingman, Arizona. And he was so excited about it, he shared this with his cousin. And the teacher of that little boy did get a hold of us and ask if we could or would possibly be able to bring the program to Kingman, And at that time, Kingman was out of our area. It really is quite a distance to travel just for one school. But Larry was so impressed by the method that the communication had gotten back to him that he made a point of driving up there and doing a program. I think it ended up being at a Boys and Girls Club in Kingman. But that is something now that will be on our circuit every year now. So we will continue going to Kingman. And the Boys and Girls Clubs, we do that in the spring.
Word of mouth is really the best advertising there is.
It is.
The best promotion.
It really is. It's awesome. It's awesome. And Larry has been up in Seattle for the summer now, and he's been doing mostly Boys and Girls Clubs in the Seattle area. And another interesting issue he's run across up there is how many children are going to school with only maybe one meal a day.
Mm-hmm.
So up there, Larry had gone around to several of the larger grocery chains and had gotten them to donate fruit juices and cracker packs so that he could take them and pass them out so the children would at least have something to eat during his programs. Another really terrible situation in the United States is the lack of meals that a lot of these children go to school with or not with. The really sad thing about the state of Washington is how many billionaires. Starbucks was started up there. Boeing has a huge drop in the Washington economy. Bill Gates has a start there. And it almost, I could not believe there were so many children in that area that were going to school hungry when they have all these billionaires living in that area. It's almost shameful.
It is. There's a painful inequity that we just can't go on with. And that's what keeps us broadcasting when we hear people doing the kind of work that you are.
Yeah, well, and thank God for you, because you're another great way for us to spread the word. I'm just so delighted, like I said to you before we went on air, Mary, you were sent to me, the greater spirit just put you in my lap. This is just a wonderful opportunity, and I'm just very pleased to be on the show tonight, and I can't thank you and Burl enough for inviting me and making me feel comfortable and just making everything go so smoothly. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Why do you think the literacy rate is so low, especially among Hispanic youths?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, in our public schools, probably I would say a lot of it has to do with desirable location, who gets the teachers and why they get them, how they get them, the monies that are funded into the low-income areas, of course, aren't there. I believe that has a lot to do with the disparity of African American, the Hispanic, Latino neighborhoods and the inner cities. Just, I'm sure it's got to be very difficult dealing with those students. They have a lot of anger issues, I'm sure. And I'm sure learning isn't a priority for a lot of the families, because when you're raised that way, that's what you learn. Mm-hmm. We learn from our parents. So if our parents are not educated and it didn't seem to be important to them, chances are those children aren't going to think it's very important either. And that's where I think charter schools are another thing that are up and coming. They're federally funded, but they're also grant funded. You see a lot of those coming in where school districts and neighborhoods have just said, you know, we've got to do something that's a little bit more drastic. But I really do believe it comes down to number crunching and taxes and who's got the money to pay for what, basically, in our country.
Exactly. We can pay for wars and we can pay for digging oil out of ground that should be sacred. Can't
exactly.
Pay for to educate the children that are displaced off such land.
Yes. Yes, we just have some kind of messed up priorities in our country, and unfortunately that gap is getting wider and wider all of the time.
Well, it may change because this system isn't sustainable and it may collapse of its own weight, and then people like you, people like us, people like all the people that we interview need to be ready to step in and provide services. Because it's going to be a tough time once this system collapses, but it's got to. We can't go on the way we are.
That's so true. That is so true. And in the long run, the way things, I know, happen, they say everything happens for a reason. So in the long run, it may be our savings in the long run. You know, after we brush off the rubble and look around and say what happened, maybe we really will get a clue and just become a little bit kinder to each other and care a little bit more about what's going on in the neighborhood next door to us. We can't control the whole world, but we certainly can do a lot to get involved in just the areas that we live in.
And that does seem to be the way humans and communities react under crisis circumstances. So, we have a lot to go on.
We show our best when we're at our worst.
Debbie,
oddly enough,
you mentioned that you aren't geographically right near where the program is and where Larry is. How do you reach out to people to promote the Savvy work?
Well, the wonder of the computer.
Uh-huh.
The wonder of all of the networking, the LinkedIn and the Facebook and the Twitter, and it's just a constant thing. I spend 2 hours every day trying to get new contacts, publishing posts, trying to make people aware of what we're doing and what is lacking in the community. I do a lot of research online to find information about things that are working in certain little schools or what isn't working. My computer is my lifeline for that.
Are there other programs that you'd like to give a shout out to, like yours, that reach out personally to the needs of children?
Well, I know there's a lot of, I'm going to fall on my face here. I don't really know the names of any programs in particular, although I know there are a lot of really worthy programs almost in every state. There's the English learning language programs that are trying to help the people that don't really have a grasp of our language to be able to go to school. I don't really know many, and shame on me, Mary.
Well, you know, it's hard to keep track of all of that, especially with all of the outreach work that you're doing. I do have to say that amazingly, people do see and meet the need. We recently interviewed an older woman. In fact, she's turning 80 very soon, who wrote a book about having lost her husband and spiritually slogging through the experience, but also growing through it. But anyway, she is now doing volunteer work with people in Portland, Maine that are refuge seekers, who are here and looking to be allowed to stay here, teaching them English as a second language. So people, even after they're retired, even after they're 80, do go on helping.
Yes, and thank heavens for that. There are a lot of people that have retired that donate their time to the grade schools even. They'll go in and assist the teachers with classes. I know they will have programs where they do assist some children with reading that are having real problems. It's just, there's just not enough of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there isn't. One of the senior citizen homes that we're looking into has also a preschool program, and the senior citizens, some of the senior citizens who live in the program, kind of reach out to these children as surrogate grandparents and read to them or share little trips with them and so forth. I thought, now that's an interesting way to meet the need without it costing anybody too terribly much.
Yes, absolutely. I think that is sort of akin to the Big Brother networking. It's like grandma and grandpa networking.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome thing, too. It's wonderful. And us retired people, we love, almost all retired people love children. I mean, there's nothing more grand than your grandchildren and just devouring that innocence and the wanting to learn. It's a wonderful way for retirees to get involved and stay in touch and help their communities out also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And given that their own grandchildren may be miles and miles away, this is, you know, brings the children and the adults together. I just think it's neat. How would listeners that you're inspiring in this area of increasing literacy and enthusiasm about books help in their own neighborhoods? Do you have any other suggestions of ways they could help?
I would say to go to your schools. That's probably the biggest area that you could get information of what communities need. There's almost always community centers. A lot of towns have teen centers. They're always looking for help there. The grade schools, there's not a grade school in America you couldn't walk into and say, I'm here to volunteer, that wouldn't just grab you right up and put you somewhere. They're all in need of volunteers. And it's a wonderful way to help your community and the children that are in it. Getting involved in your church also is a good way to get involved with the children in the area. Summer camps, school programs in the summer. There's a lot of churches that have, like, summer camps.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to get involved with the children, too.
How can those of our listeners who might want to hook up with you at Savvy or to contribute to you, how would they reach you?
Yes, well, there's several ways. They can go to our website, which is www.savvykids.org, and there's you can leave a message at the bottom of the screen, and Larry or I will get back with you, or you're welcome to call me at home, and my phone number is 775-340-4238, and Larry is also available by phone for anyone that wants to get involved or has questions about what we do. And Larry's phone number is area code 480-823-5437. And I thank you for reminding me about that. I meant to mention it several times, and I got so busy it went out my head.
That's quite all right. You know, we get interested in the topic, and we forget to do the little promotional piece. I think we all do.
Exactly. Which is good, I guess, because I was nervous about doing this, and looky here, my time is almost past.
What do you see as the future of books in our increasingly digital culture?
Oh, I know what I would like to see is that there's always something we have in our hands that we can open and touch and feel the weight of it, smell the paper. But I'm a little old-fashioned. And I know even my grandchildren, all of their reading assignments now in school are done on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
All of the testing they do is on computers. And I think that's what we're going to see is more and more people with the e-books, which is great. you have the wonderful thing about ebooks is you have a vast library of reading material at your very fingertips.
It is wonderful.
So whatever, it really is. It's a wonderful age. It's a wonderful, I mean, we have just at our fingertips, we can discover anything. Remember when we had to have Encyclopedia Britannica to do our homework?
Yeah.
And nowadays, they just go online. Whatever the child is interested in finding out about, it's virtually at our fingertips. And even in families that do not have the money to purchase, that's where the library system is awesome.
Right.
All libraries these days, even the little tiny community libraries, have computer availability. And also the books at this point. We still have those good old books to read.
And I at least prefer to read a book, too. I'm always kind of disappointed when one of our guests sends me their the book that they're going to be talking about digitally, because I love to have a book in my hand and be able to read it and be able to ask questions in the margins and you know, mark passages that we're going to want to talk about or things that we might, Pearl and I might want to come back to later. It just,
yes.
It just, there's something absolutely wonderful about books that I hope we don't lose.
I do too. That is my very biggest wish, is that we always have that, the visual stimulation of a book in our hand, the feel of it, the smell of it, and like you say, dog-ear those pages, mark it all you want, go back and refer to it 100 times. It's wonderful to have that hard copy. I don't know if the younger generation feels that way. They've been brought up differently than us, definitely. Mm-hmm. And speaking of the younger generation and how differently they've been brought up, I have another very interesting little statistic for you guys. As sad as the reading statistics are in the United States, according to a Phoenix, Arizona news station, 1 out of 4 children in the U.S. by the age of 4 have their own iPod.
Wow.
Which is pretty staggering when you consider how low our reading statistics are.
Well, they must be reading somewhat, because otherwise, how would they be? I mean, not all information on the computer can be gotten to by sound, you know, orally or aurally. They have to be able to do some reading.
Yes. What do you think is the driver to that? Just curious.
Oh, I'm sorry, repeat that for me, would you?
What do you think is the driver to those lower test scores? I mean, if the kids are being presented to it via electronics, it seems like it's being counter-effective. Am I right?
Yes, I do believe it's counter-effective, and I'm not really sure I understood the question, Burl, but I'm going to give it a shot here. I think the drive for the iPod is because we are in a social arena that we're a disposable country, and the new techno gizmo that's coming out is just, I don't know about you, but I see a lot of street people with cell phones. It always kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, it really does.
And it really does. iPods, you know, if they could be used properly, I think an iPod could be an awesome learning tool for a child to read. I think mostly what they use them for, though, is game playing, which in itself isn't bad. It probably helps with their coordination. I'm sure it helps with their eye-hand coordination, but to me, it's not the most important thing.
No, and it teaches an awful lot of violence and consumer values.
Yes.
Daring. We're running down on time. Girl, you wanted to ask one last question.
What most potently inspires you to keep going in this field so long after your retirement?
Well, it keeps me young. I love young children, and it's just, it's such a worthy cause. It just, I don't want to see our world ending up in a rubble when there could have been things we tried to do our very best to avoid. And there's nothing that can be more fun than trying to inspire a child to read, to see that gleam in their eye that they, I get it. It is just the most exciting moment to be able to share that. So whether it's your grandchild or this Savvy organization or whatever it is that gets that kid spark, that's inspiring in itself. And I hope it keeps me going.
Yeah, it really is rewarding to see people's eyes light up, to see people, you know, just responding. And I think it's important that so many of us elders are doing so.
Yes, and thank heavens for the older generation. I think we're going to be the ones that sort of pull things together. although I will say this, and the generation, by no means am I trying to shortcut the younger generation.
Right.
We have some wonderfully intelligent, wonderfully humanistic new people coming up in our social skills here. And they may be the ones that save us, I hope.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, we certainly are encouraging a kind of hope for the future, and that's really the best that we can do. Thank you so much for all you've shared with us.
Yeah, thanks. This was a great interview.
Oh, thank you so much for letting me ramble on and on and on. I didn't know I had so much in me.
And thank
you. We knew you did.
Thank you, listeners. Go ahead.
Yes, I was going to say good luck with your Friday interview. I'm going to be sure to check that out.
Okay. Thank you. And I was just going to remind listeners that we are going to be interviewed, and we're really passionate about sharing Sophia's wisdom in as we've written about it in Sophia's Web. And in helping people to understand that they, just through their being and doing and loving, can help to heal the wounded nature of the world and of people. And contact me at mary@envisionthismedia.com if you have trouble figuring out how to get to Code Connection this Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Jesse Nichols George Show. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Have a wonderful week.